Welcome to Next at Work by Workable, where we explore what's next for our teams, talent, and the tools that support us. Each episode, we sit down with leaders shaping the future of work, from CEOs and CHROs to innovators and everyday change makers, to talk about the ideas, trends, challenges, and breakthroughs redefining how we work. I'm your host, Brendan Ginetti. Let's talk what's next at work.
We have Matt Alder with us today as our guest. In addition to being the host of the Recruiting Future podcast, which is one of the most listened to business-centric podcasts in the entire world, where he's interviewed some of the most prominent thought leaders, executives, again, in the world. He is also a strategic consultant, a futurist, advising employers around the world on innovation and HR talent acquisition. He's also the author of two books on talent strategy. He's delivered keynotes in 18 different countries, and he helps organizations think differently about the future of work. So he is essentially like ChatGPT in human form. It's truly a privilege to have you here today, Matt. So welcome to this.
Thank you for having me. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. It's always good to be on someone else's podcast for a change and be answering questions rather than asking them. And it's a very comfy chair as well. So it's great.
It's low. I need to get used to this. Before we get into it, like, Next at Work is so future forward thinking. But in order to get to the future, you had to start somewhere in the past. So the very first question I ask on every episode of the Next at Work podcast, which is really telling, is what was your first ever job that you ever had?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think the way I'm going to answer this is by telling you about the job that I never had. So I left university in the middle of a recession, and I couldn't get a job. And it's really interesting because, without wanting to make myself sound absolutely ancient, this was before the internet. We had color TV. It wasn't black and white, but it was before the internet. And to get a job, you had to look in a newspaper. You had to then write a cover letter and put your CV in an envelope, post it, and then wait for 2 weeks for someone to get back to you or not to get back to you. And it just seemed like a horribly terrible, inefficient process. When I did get interviews, the interviews felt like kind of really shallow, and I was just like, what chance do I ever have of getting a job with this kind of recruitment process? It's really interesting because kind of since then I've kind of always had a bit of a mission to say, what could we do to make recruiting, recruiting better? And I did eventually get a job, and I spent a good kind of few years working in sort of various different sales jobs in different industries. But that kind of initial experience, I also went to a very unfashionable university, which was obviously held against me as well. So I think that kind of early experience of the job market and it just seeming very strange and unfair has kind of really sort of stayed with me through the years.
Definitely. I mean, we'll talk about that later, but I feel like candidates presently can probably relate to some of that.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that you saw a problem and you said you're going to fix it, which obviously leads you to founding Recruiting Future. For those of you, or for those that maybe aren't familiar with your work, what led you to ultimately not just forming the podcast and the brand, but to be a consultant and to fixing talent acquisition?
Yeah, absolutely. So I suppose continuing that kind of story along, I kind of around about sort of 1999, 2000, the internet came along and revolutionized everything. I had a job working in a recruitment marketing agency at the time. And the great news was the youngest people got put in charge of the internet because it was new technology. No one knew what it was. So I really had the chance to kind of sort of live through those early days of how technology and the internet could change recruiting. And then from there, we've obviously seen, a couple of decades of interesting technology-driven change, from social media to mobile to where we are with AI now. In terms of how I got to do what I do now, I have always been fascinated by those kind of patterns of change and what happens to recruiting kind of along the way. So I started a blog called Recruiting Future in about, I can't even remember when, probably 2003 or something like that, and used to just blog about what I was seeing and all that sort of stuff. I decided that I would leave the crazy world of marketing and advertising and help companies with innovation. So I kind of became a consultant. And then about 11 years ago, I flipped from writing a blog to doing a podcast because I've always liked podcasts. Yeah. And I really fancied doing one. So I just kind of set that up, and then it's sort of taken off from there. And it's just a great privilege to be able to talk to so many people and find out what the issues are and how recruiting's evolving, and kind of relate that back to kind of what's happened in the past. So you know, I feel very lucky to be able to do that and to keep having those conversations.
Definitely, you were ahead of the curve 11 years ago. Wow. But yeah, no, I mean, I fully relate. I think we're like 5 episodes deep into this podcast, and I've genuinely have learned so much about the space that it, like, just the diversity of thought is so important to learn about any industry.
Absolutely.
I know you said you don't want to date yourself, but your experience spans over 2 decades. So not only have you seen, you know, TA change, but you've seen like the world change. And especially right now, I've talked to so many recruiters and TA professionals, and it seems it's almost kind of reminiscent, and not that I remember this, I'm sorry, I'm also dating myself for kind of being young, but what's going on now with like AI and whatnot is reminiscent of the .com boom. So I've been told.
Very much so.
But I'm kind of curious, like, with all that being said and all the changes globally, what do you think is the biggest challenge that recruiters are facing right now?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And I think that right now, it seems to be recruiters are kind of facing every single challenge I've ever seen them face all at once, all at the same time. So, you know, you have huge numbers of, you know, for many jobs in many companies, huge numbers of people applying, you know, whether that's driven by, you know, economic reasons or candidates using AI, but, you know, huge numbers of applications. It's still very hard to find the right talent, so that's still hard. And the perennial do more with less is even more, you know, is kind of even more amped up than it's ever been before. So, yeah, it is a very difficult time because of all those issues. I think beyond that, there is a kind of a more of a long-term challenge as well, because I do really believe that the AI revolution is going to kind of massively disrupt, ultimately, in a good way, the way that we do recruiting. And I think the challenge is having that long-term view, that thing around reinvention, while having to deal with all of these, you know, all of these issues of, you know, trying to find the right talent, having too many applicants, and you know, smaller teams and all that sort of stuff. So it's quite a it's a difficult time, but it's, you know, I think it's that there's excitement there about what might come out of this.
Definitely, yeah. We're gonna unpack the AI boom, but first, it's hard not to note that like recruiting is such an interesting role, because every change that happens in recruiting and TA also affects candidates, which most of the time don't actually even work for the company where the changes are coming from. So what do you see right now as the biggest challenge facing candidates?
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very similar to what I was talking about when I was looking for a job all those kind of years ago. I mean, fundamentally, you know, technology has changed the way that we do recruiting, but it also hasn't. You know, a lot of those issues that we've had for decades around how recruiting works are still there.
Yeah.
I think that from a candidate perspective, you've also got this added complication of, you know, the world's changing, jobs are changing, you know, careers that people have had for a long time, you know, may not exist in the same way anymore. We've obviously got a huge issue with early careers, you know, jobs disappearing, people not being able to kind of get on the career ladder not existing in a way that it's existed before. So it's a difficult time to be a candidate. And I think that at the same time, certainly sort of post-pandemic, our expectations about work and what it's for and how it kind of relates to our life have changed as well. So yeah. I think we're kind of in this sort of big period of redefinition in terms of thinking about jobs and careers and all that sort of stuff, which isn't particularly helpful if you're looking for a job, you know, right now. So there's some interesting challenges out there.
Yeah, because at the same time, you know, as a candidate, it's getting harder, but also I feel like you have more demands than ever. And again, we'll get to that. But yeah, it's not just an interesting time for the recruiters, but also the candidates. And like I said, AI is obviously one of the biggest reasons why. Obviously, we just touched upon our AI agent. Who's excited for that?
Yeah.
Yes, it's very cool. I love playing with it. I love trying to get it to break, but it doesn't because it's so perfect. I'm literally like, you don't want to know what actually I can write into it. But never mind. I would love your perspective, though. Like, obviously, the AI agent that what we just saw is so cool. But like beyond the agent and presently, because AI agent, it's coming very soon, but it's not here today. So presently, how can recruiters best use AI, and what have you seen work best?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question because it's changing so quickly. And I think the challenge is it's changing quickly, more quickly than any of us can kind of keep up with. So when I was talking to people on the podcast a year ago, 18 months ago, about what are you doing with AI, you know, obviously a lot of stuff about we're scheduling interviews, we're writing job adverts and all those, you know, all of those good things. One of the things that I do with the podcast is I'm looking for the edge cases. I'm looking for people who are doing interesting things and experimenting. And some of the stuff that's come through in the last 6 months is just kind of mind-blowing in terms of what's possible. One of the real kind of frontier areas around it is in kind of volume hiring, retail hiring, restaurant hiring, all that kind of stuff where there's a lot of volume and people need to hire very quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, seeing some just incredible stuff being done with AI interviews and slashing time to hire in those industries from 4 weeks to 2 days, you know, some kind of really extraordinary stuff that is sort of being automated and is kind of sort of being driven through AI. But, you know, innovation is never evenly distributed. So it's different in lots of other different industries. And I think all of us are just trying to keep up with what's going on at the moment. But I think that the potential is just, you know, kind of just unlimited in terms of what's possible if you can cut through all of the noise and the hype and the nonsense that kind of exists around the space.
Of course, yeah, it's not like a magic fix, and not everything is perfect. And it's interesting when I attend events like this, and most of you all are workable customers or clients, but you are all probably on different journeys with your AI usage and your companies, which I find fascinating. There's a gap that exists. And like I said, it's not a magic fix, and there is area to be cautious about. So I guess conversely, where should recruiters, TA leaders maybe be cautious about AI, or where have you seen people lean into AI that isn't correct?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think every circumstance in every company is different. You know, there's still just some companies who won't let anyone use any kind of AI. It was very similar with the internet, actually. There used to be companies that wouldn't let people use the internet because it was seen as a wasting time and a high security risk. So we've kind of seen a lot of this narrative, before. There are obviously considerable risks attached to using AI in hiring. You know, there's obviously much said about things like the EU AI Act, existing legislation in the UK, and things that we all need to be aware of. So I think that there is a need for caution. Mm-hmm. You do see crazy things out there, like recruiters on LinkedIn describing how they've just put 5 CVs into the public version of ChatGPT and got some great results, which is terrifying from a bias, privacy, GDPR, every single perspective you can kind of think of. There's a kind of right to be cautious. I think one of the things that we have to deal with, though, is HR in particular, but also in talent acquisition, there's a difference between being risk averse and risk avoidance. And I think that sometimes we can be very risk avoidant, but actually in this current environment, you have to be risk averse, but there is risk that you need to deal with. I've spoken to a lot of legal professionals around what's going on in AI at the moment. They don't really have the answers either, but from their perspective, in terms of kind of managing risk and making decisions about what their companies are doing, there has to be a kind of a degree of flexibility around that, because this isn't going, you know, whatever happens, this technology is not going back in the box. It's just going to kind of keep developing, whether it continues at this blistering pace, whether it lives up to some of the ridiculous expectations and hype that's out there, we don't know, but it's not going to go backwards. So I think that caution and understanding is important, but at the same time, I think everyone should be experimenting with it in some way, shape, or form. So if you can't do that within your team, then you know, start doing it in what you do outside of work, because I kind of, I'm lucky enough to sort of spend all day every day, but just spend a lot of time on this, and I struggle to keep up with what's going on sometimes, and I've just been amazed and completely floored by some of the things that AI has been able to do for my business, and just how quickly that's kind of evolving and developing.
Yeah, no, I love that opinion. Like, just because something's new and potentially might be scary doesn't mean you need to shy away from it completely, but it also doesn't mean you need to fully embrace it. Like, there's a happy medium, and kind of bring it back to like the human center part of AI. Like, yeah, you need to use common sense. I think sometimes we forget about that. Like, we need to assess the programs and the software that we're considering, and not either yes or no it. But on the candidate side, obviously, beyond AI and recruiting, like, AI has touched a lot of people's personal lives and the things that they do, including their resumes and their cover letters. I spoke with a company recently for the podcast, and they allow candidates to use AI for the resume, but they need to disclose that they use AI for the resume or the cover letter. So I guess, what advice do you have for recruiters when it comes to using AI for their candidates? Because at some point, it seems like it's inevitable, everyone's using AI now, but at the same time, a big issue that she had when reviewing the resumes is a lot of them were coming back the same.
Yeah, absolutely. This is such a big topic. Where to start? So first of all, I think that we need to be really clear that there is a difference between fraud and criminal behavior and what some people might call cheating by using AI to write a resume. So there's a distinct line there. And, you know, as organizations, you know, being aware of making sure people are who they say they are, and, you know, that they're not being, that's not going on is a kind of very important aspect of it. So with that said, you know, candidates using AI, I'm always interested when people say, oh, we're going to ban candidates from using AI, because you turn your phone on and you're using AI. you know, it's like a lot of the grammar checks and everything are using AI now to, like, improve kind of writing. So it's just like, I'm not quite sure how you draw the line there or how you police it. And I think the thing is, there's been this bit of an arms race of, okay, you know, we're going to employ technology to spot when people are using AI. And, you know, I know from the education sector, you know, lots of false positives of people being accused of writing essays with AI when they haven't, and all this sort of stuff. So it's an arms race that can never be won. It's just like, this is what's going to happen. These are the tools that we have available. Thinking about that from a work perspective, you know, we probably want to hire people who are good at using AI. Yeah. So I think that's an important factor. Also, I think one of the things that people have overlooked is, I think a lot of the innovation about how recruiting works is going to come from that candidate side, because there's a whole industry growing up of helping people find jobs using AI. There is a proportion of that industry that is just kind of grifting and exploitative and horrible. But likewise, there are companies, you know, that are kind of more ethical, inventing really interesting tools, which are ultimately going to break recruiting as we know it. Because I think what you say there about every CV looks the same, how do we deal with that? The problem isn't candidates using AI. The problem is that CVs are entirely inadequate for hiring people. Now, it's a very easy thing to stand on stage or sit on stage and say. it's a much more difficult thing to deal with. So I think that we're probably looking at some kind of fundamental changes about how recruiting actually works. Yeah. And that's a good thing. And I think if you think about CVs, they are deliberately designed to be reductive because of the human time involved. So you only have a certain amount of time to read about someone's background. So the CV has kind of served that purpose well. If you have AI in the mix that could just like look at huge amounts of different data sources and synthesize that information, then we can do things in recruiting that we've never been able to do before. Now, what does that look like? How does it solve the problems that we have right now? Is a much more difficult question to answer. I think in the short term, it's been interesting to see the assessment sector getting its act together much more in terms of making scientifically valid assessment more accessible than it's ever been before. So I think there's some short term stuff thinking about how and when you can assess candidates in the funnel, but ultimately I think we're probably moving to something that looks very different. And it's the debate at the moment, I think, about what that looks like. And reflecting that back to when I was talking about the challenges for recruiters, I think that's the challenge. It's like, what comes next? And I think it's difficult, but it's also exciting because there's the opportunity to just shape that and shape something that might be the norm for as long as CVs have, which is several hundred years, apparently.
Well, with change to the actual process, comes change from like the demand from candidates as well. So, like I said, the industry is changing so rapidly, and with that, like, what are candidates demanding that they weren't necessarily demanding a few years ago? And while it's like kind of still an influx and transitioning, how can recruiters deal with that right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think, as I said earlier, our whole kind of attitudes to work are changing. There's always been a dynamic where, we've talked about the candidate experience for as long as I can probably remember, and it's always an issue. And it's always an issue because the expectations of our own expectations of how the world works and how we get customer service, if you like, are always accelerating and evolving. So it's always playing catch up. You think about the consumer experience that we have and how we can use our phones. We can get instant feedback, instant everything, and that doesn't work in the hiring process. So there's always going to be that mismatch where candidates are expecting things that just can't necessarily be delivered. I think that at the moment we're kind of in that sort of cycle where in many industries it's kind of an employer-driven market, so there's a sense that we've got so many candidates we can give them a bad experience and it doesn't matter. And I think that it's just really important that companies do everything they can to give a great candidate experience, to give great feedback to people. I mean, I was having dinner with a friend last night who is looking for a job, is going for a senior recruiting process. And spent a huge amount of time, doing a presentation, probably too much in terms of what was being asked of them, doing a presentation for a job. There's probably only sort of two people on this shortlist, and that company's not got back to her, and they said they'd get back to her, which is almost inexcusable when someone's put that much time into it. So I think it's just those basic things are kind of important, but there's always this kind of mismatch between our expectations of a process and what the process can deliver, and that will just continue because our expectations now are we want everything instantly. Yeah. And I think that's always the challenge.
Yeah, it's been interesting being here in London because I'm from US and from Boston, and just the differences, especially that I've seen from candidate expectation. Like a big thing back in Massachusetts, it's a law now, is pay transparency. So you need to post the salary range on a job description that you have, as well as the whole remote hybrid situation. Like, I feel like that's not really calmed down since COVID. Where's London at with that, just out of curiosity? Like, what's in demand right now? Is it hybrid?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. It's it's funny because the debate seems to kind of die down, and then a big company will suddenly declare everyone needs to be back at work, and then it comes up again. There's a great example, actually. Someone flagged it up to me. I can't remember the name of the company. Probably good that I can't remember them. Who just announced that they were getting everyone back to the office 5 days a week. And it was pointed out that they made the same announcement a year ago. So I think that tells you a lot about the way that people are kind of responding to it. I think it's kind of probably slightly different throughout the country. So I live in Scotland, and probably just because of the nature of the geography of Scotland, there isn't really a debate about remote or hybrid work. It just kind of happens because it sort of suits, seems to sort of suit the geography of the country. So I think it probably varies a bit between city and city and all that sort of stuff. I mean, I think that the fact that we are still having this debate, however many years ago the pandemic was, is insanity. It's just, I can't believe that it still kind of goes on. I just think that companies should just give people the best environment to do the best work. You know, however that works for that company and that person should be the way that we do it. But I sense that this is going to run and run as an argument.
Yeah, definitely. So true what you said. Like every couple of days, there's something new on like LinkedIn that's an issue for the week, and then it's a different issue, and then it's back in the news cycle like the following week. With all that being said, obviously we touched on a lot of where recruiting is right now and what it's expected to look like in the future. Before we go, I guess, what advice do you have for recruiters on like what skills they should develop or hone in on to succeed in the future of talent acquisition?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's two parts to the answer to this. I think that we do live in this time of kind of dynamic change. I think the ability to question the unquestionable is always important. So it's kind of like asking questions about the way that you do recruiting that people might have never asked before. It's like, why do we do this? Why do we have interviews? Why do we? Because I think that I'm not saying that all of those things are wrong, but I think sometimes asking those questions can throw up some really interesting answers. It's like, well, we've always done it because I'm not sure, so maybe we could do it a different way. So I think asking questions that never been asked before is important. Having a sense of curiosity and a real kind of agile sort of way of thinking is important. A slightly kind of more specific answer. One of the things I've done with my podcast is I've got about 300 hours of content. It's about 3 million words of transcript. And with AI, I've managed to actually start to look at that and look at the back catalog and see how things have evolved over time. And one of the things that I've done is pulled out the traits of the real kind of high-performing TA leaders, the ones who went on to better jobs, the ones who went on to become CBOs, or whatever it was. And there's kind of really four things that kind of stand out. So the four things that they were all good at were foresight, so the ability to not just try and predict the future, but actually shape the future. So, have a vision about what the future looked like for talent acquisition in their organization and see that through. The second one was influence, influencing stakeholders, hiring managers, C-suite, whoever it is, to kind of make those visions happen. The third one was talent. So thinking about innovative approaches to hiring and talent management, whether that's skills-based hiring or whatever it was. And the fourth one was technology, which was understanding how technology can fit into their organization and understanding how it works. So they were kind of four areas that that all of those people had in common. And I think they're really good things to think about in the environment that we are currently living through.
Well, that was very eloquently said. Thank you for that. This has been a great conversation, a lot of insight for sure. And we are going to open it up for questions if anyone has any. But before that, we do wrap every podcast interview with this question. And I actually kind of want everyone in this room to think about it too, because it's so funny when I ask this on the podcast, like people struggle to answer it because I think work is great and it becomes 100% of your life sometimes, especially in recruiting. But there's life outside of it. So what is one personal goal, aside from your career, aside from TA, that you hope to accomplish in the near future?
So I'd like to write another book. I really hope my wife isn't listening to this, because that's writing a book is very time consuming. And maybe write a book that isn't about recruitment. Okay. I think that's that would be something that I'm thinking about at the moment.
I love it. And well, now I kind of need to ask. If it's not about recruitment, what would it be about?
I can't say. I've got some ideas that I kind of want to work through. But okay. I think the general thing about humans and work is a very interesting topic.
Love it. It seems like you got something cooking already.
Yeah. I can't divorce myself from my job. That's the trouble. Yes.
Yeah. No, I think that's a common theme that many people here probably have. Well, thank you again. Can we give it up for Matt Alder? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Abby from Essex and Workable. You mentioned, Matt, that you think people might move away from CV-based hiring or requiring a CV.
Yeah.
I'm keen to know if you've spoken to anyone who's started to think about doing that or actively doing that, and if anyone in this room has thought about that.
I think there are certain... I've seen kind of experiments with it in certain places. There's been some really interesting couple of companies on the podcast who've experimented with what they called open hiring, where literally it was like, provided the person can work these hours, doesn't have a criminal record, we'll just take them and see what happens. And I think the company that did that almost did a split test against people they'd hired through. It was a retail environment. People they'd hired in a traditional way, and there was either no difference or the open hiring people actually outperformed the people that they'd done.
That's so really cool.
Yeah. So I've seen, but only in very kind of limited pilots and specific circumstances. I've seen people change their kind of recruiting funnels around, so they might lead with assessment, for example. But it's, I think one of the issues is it's very easy to say, well, we'll just abandon CVs because that makes logical sense. It's kind of baked into the DNA of everyone who has a job that you have a CV and that's what you do. And I think that there is a underlying mental model that needs to shift before we can get there. I think there was another example of a company who tried to move away, but then it caused like a lot of controversy because it was going against people's mental model of how recruitment works. So that's an interesting dynamic. But there are some interesting things definitely going on, and lots of possibilities around it.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Oh, perfect.
Hi, I'm Sarah. I work for the Children's Investment Fund Foundation. I was interested in the assessments that you were mentioning. We use Savile Wave at the moment, and we do the professional styles one for senior hires. Just wondering if there are any others that you're hearing people using a lot or that you recommend?
Not that I would necessarily recommend. I think that that space is really interesting. There's a lot of innovation going on. I think the thing that people need to think about is what I found kind of amazing over the last few years about as I've looked into assessment more and more. I'd never really used to pay that much attention to it, but I've sort of had so many occupational psychologists on the podcast sort of talking it through, is that we have this established peer-reviewed science that's always evolving, that people go to universities and do PhDs in, that predicts how people will perform in a job. And most employers don't use it or ignore it. And that's insane when you kind of think about it. Actually, the science is there to tell us. So I think with assessment, it's important to make sure that the provider you're using is using that kind of science, because I think one of the things that's coming in, particularly with AI, is there are people coming into the space who are potentially coming from a potential sort of AI data science perspective, not from a psychology perspective, and are selling assessments and ways of assessing people that don't have that scientific basis behind it. So I think that's probably the best advice that I could give, that you make sure that when you're using assessments that it's based on the actual science, not some kind of tech company's science that they've just kind of made up because, hey, recruitment's broken and I'm sure we can fix it with this really cool AI. So hopefully that helps.
Thank you.
Hi, Matt. Good morning. Thank you. I wanted to ask about kind of, sorry, my name is Alicia and I'm from Digital Catapult. I want to ask about kind of young people and entering the workforce. So I think we have a challenge in this country where we see a lot of young people kind of leaving university and not really having opportunities available to them. My question is two-part. What would you say to employers about, you know, providing more opportunities for young people to get experience in the workplace? And what would you say to those people looking to get into jobs about kind of differentiating themselves to kind of be able to get some of those opportunities?
Yeah, it's a great question. What I'd say to employers is, where is your leadership pipeline coming from? Because I think that there is such a sort of drive to cut entry-level jobs at the moment. I don't necessarily believe it's because of AI. I think there's some economic factors kind of going on, but obviously there is this sense that we don't need entry-level people because AI can kind of fill that gap. And it's just what happens down the line with your organization if we have a whole generation that doesn't come into the workforce? What does that look like for work? And I think that there are parallels with there are sectors which, if you kind of look back over the years, have sort of cut entry-level hiring, and then 5-10 years down the line, they've suddenly got a skill shortage of senior talent. So I think that employers need to join that dots, and you need to join those dots, and I think really have a responsibility to try and look at how to solve this problem. I think fundamentally we have an issue with the education system, because I think that people are learning skills the skills that people are being taught at school and in university are based on a version of the world that's probably 50 years out of date. So I think that's an issue. It's a really difficult thing. I have a couple of nephews of that age looking for work, and it's kind of like, how do you stand out? And I think that there is this huge opportunity around, we have these AI tools that are available, publicly available. I think there's a brilliant opportunity for people to educate themselves and, learn skills and do something different. I think that the problem is also how we talk to people about work and what to expect, and I'm not making much sense here, but I think what I'm trying to say is that some of the sort of traditional kind of entry points to work might not be the best things for people. Yeah, there's the opportunity to learn skills, differentiate themselves, and I'm not sure that young people are being given the right kind of advice, if that makes sense. So it's a big issue. I wish I had all the answers as well, but I do think the employers have a responsibility to play a part in fixing this.
Hi, Matt. My name is Sarah. I'm a talent acquisition partner at a tech company called Just Bark. And my question is around take-home assessments. So I know you said that your friend has also worked a lot on a take-home assessment, which then was never given feedback. And my company, we do a lot of take-home assessments, and we find that it's a really good way to assess, or it used to be a really good way to assess people's determination and how much they really thought about it as a given task. But I think it's an interesting challenge now with AI. We've seen a couple of presentations that were very AI-generated content.
Yeah.
What do you think alternatives to that could be? Would it be a final interview, maybe doing more of a live task where you really try to understand people's problem-solving skills? What kind of approaches would you suggest to kind of mitigate that?
It's a great question. I think you have to really think about, why are we giving someone that test? What is it that we actually want it to tell us? And is there a different way to get that information? I think that's the fundamental thing. There's a few choices, and I think it depends on what the answer to that question is. An obvious one is actually to get people in an office and lock them in a room and get them to do it. That may not be desirable or practical, or it may be, depending on what you're trying to assess. I think it's something that we need to really you know, kind of just really think through from that perspective. And are we trying to test the knowledge in someone's head, or are we trying to test how they're going to work with people in a particular environment? And could we, you know, mirror that in some way? I had a really interesting conversation with a CEO of a medium-sized company about this. Now, his company employs, I don't know, 300, 400 people, and he's the CEO, so it's kind of easy for him to think about this and do this. But, you know, what they did was, you know, they went through the recruitment process. They would invite people to come and spend the day working with them, which they would pay them for, and then they'd kind of use that as a way of judging, you know, kind of various things about them. So I think it's something that we need to rethink. I think it's going to be different for every company, but I think asking that question about why do we do this and what is it that we want to know, and do we really need to know that, is probably a good place to start to get to the right answer.
That's great. Thank you.
Hi, Matt. Kathleen from Boston here. So it sounds like you've had a very incredible career, and I'm just wondering what the highlight has been for you.
Oh, wow. There's a question. Sitting here in this chair talking to all of you, I think is... I think the highlight is just being able to grow the podcast and to be able to talk to so many people and get so many different views of what's going on, and I never get bored of it. I get frustrated sometimes trying to get that damn thing live, but I never get bored with it. So I think that the last 10 years of having those conversations and continuing to have them is the highlight, because it's just a fascinating thing to do, and I say I'm very lucky to be in the position to be able to do it.
The way we work is always evolving, and we're here to share real-time insights from the people shaping what's next. For more conversations like this, plus articles and ideas, follow the Next at Work newsletter on LinkedIn. And if you're ready to make your hiring and HR more efficient, head to workable.com to request a demo or start a free trial. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.